Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guest is a leader of a little-discussed minority in the Middle East, a Palestinian Christian. Lutheran minister Mitri Raheb, born in Bethlehem, is senior pastor of the Evangelical Lutheran Christmas Church there, president of the larger regional organization, the Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Jordan and the Holy Land, and president of Dar al-Kalima University in Bethlehem, and he has a new book called Faith in the Face of Empire, The Bible Through Palestinian Eyes. Reverend Mitri is in New York today and in our studio. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. It's great
to
be
people
here.
Around here think Lutherans are all blue-eyed and blonde hair and come from Minnesota by the way of Scandinavia. So there are Palestinian Lutherans?
Correct. You know, remember that Christianity started in the Middle East. And Jesus was not born in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, but in Bethlehem, Palestine. And the Bible actually is a product of that region, not of the Bible Belt.
And the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is generally seen as involving Muslims and Jews. Do the Christians have a unique place in that equation, in your opinion?
Oh, definitely. Unfortunately, today the Christians make only less than 2% of the population. But they play a very vital role. For example, in a study we did, we discovered that Christians in Palestine run around one-third of the health services, around 45% of non-governmental organizations that are human rights organizations, social institutions, educational facilities. So we play a very, very vital role in that region.
In your book's introduction, you write that it's important to remember that the Bible is a Middle Eastern book, and while that may seem obvious, you think the notion hasn't been given enough attention. What about the Bible being a Middle Eastern book?
If you look at the Bible, the whole culture that is there is really from the Middle East. But what I am writing about in the book is that actually we cannot understand the Bible unless we understand imperial occupation. Because what is so specific about Palestine is that we have been living under empire after the other. It started with the Assyrians, Babylonians, Persians, Greek, Roman, Arab, and then it goes on with the Ottomans, British, and today with the Israeli occupation.
So to see Jesus in that context?
Oh, definitely. I mean, Jesus was born under occupation, lived his entire life under occupation. It's actually, this is what I share with Jesus. And at the end of the day, he was crushed by the Roman Empire.
And you write that you've come to believe it's not by chance that the three monotheistic religions and their sacred scriptures all came from the same region. Does not a coincidence mean a divine plan?
Because I believe that the Bible is the response of the people of that region to this imperial rule. Because if you are crushed by the empire all the time, you ask the question, God, where are you? And I think the Bible wants really to answer this question. And the interesting thing is that in the Bible, we see that at the end of the day, God reveals himself at places where no one thinks he is, in the weakness, in the powerlessness.
So that's the Christian Bible or the New Testament? And do you think that the Old Testament or the Jewish Bible and the Quran are answering the same question?
Definitely. I mean, the Hebrew Bible, it's very clear. I mean, God is with his people. He goes with them into exile. When Jerusalem is destroyed and the temple is burned down, he is there. And so I see this going really throughout the Bible from Genesis 1 until Revelation 22.
And the Quran?
I think so, too, because, in the historic setting, Islam emerged when the two empires, the Byzantine Empire on the one hand and the Persian Empire, were fighting each other. And this is exactly when Islam actually emerged. So it has to do very much with the empire.
Maybe religion is the problem in the Middle East, though. You know, my holy site is built on your holy site, and this religion's first most holy city, and that one's third most holy city, and the savior from another was born around the corner. Maybe the air is too thick with competing notions of the sacred And that's the source of these centuries of war.
I disagree, because I think if politicians were capable of making peace, we will have less religious fundamentalism today. The emergence of religious fundamentalism actually is a response to the collapse of any political solution. But I personally, and I write that in the book, I believe in the Middle East we have too much politics. You know, we get politics for breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner. I mean, imagine that, for example, Condoleezza Rice visited Palestine 28 times, doing nothing. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, she wasn't successful. So, and the problem is so much religion totally disconnected from, so much politics totally disconnected from the polis, from the people on the street. And I say this as a pastor, I believe in the Middle East we have too much religion. We have so much religion that God himself is sometimes saying, give me a break. I cannot handle that much religion. And so with so much religion, we are losing our spirit, our soul. And that's actually what this book talks about.
You mentioned Condoleezza Rice. Of course, she was with the Bush administration. Do you have the same feeling about Jimmy Carter or Clinton's envoys or John Kerry's peace effort right now? Do you want the United States to just stay out of this, you know, intractable conflict?
No, I think it's very important for the U.S. to engage, because the international community is part of the problem, but they have the potential to be part of the solution. And I believe myself that John Kerry is actually genuine in trying to strike a peace. The question, I think, which I talks about in the book, is it going to be a Pax Romana, like the time of Jesus, basically the empire dictating what peace is, or a genuine peace that takes really also the plight of the occupied very seriously?
You're a well-known critic of the Israeli occupation, but your bio in the book begins by calling you a powerful advocate for peace in the Arab-Israeli conflict. Does that mean you advocate a certain peace plan?
Not a certain one. I'm very flexible, actually, when it comes to political solutions. But what is, for me, important are three things. First, equality, because that's a value I cannot compromise on. I cannot accept that Israelis have more rights than Palestinians, that Muslims have more rights than Christians, etc. We all have to be equal in front of God and in front of the law. And secondly, I believe on self-determination. I think every group in the Middle East, because it's a very diverse region, and every group needs space to be able to express their self-explanation. So that's important for the Jewish people. That's important for, you know, the Christians. That's important for the Palestinians, etc. And the third is regional cooperation, because without regional cooperation, the whole region actually is going in the wrong direction.
So on regional cooperation and on equality for the different populations, former President Jimmy Carter was here this week, and I asked him about Israeli security concerns in a two-state solution scenario, that if Israel gives up military or police powers to a Palestinian state, that Palestinian government officials may not be able politically to crack down on rejectionist groups who are still planning attacks on Israel. And here's what President Carter said.
I think the Palestinians will accept a demilitarization of the Palestinian state. I think they will also accept troops being sent in from the United States and from Europe and even from Israel to make sure that there's no violence that is organized or directed against Israel. And I don't think it's necessary for the Israeli military to retain control over all of the West Bank, including the eastern area of it, that in the Jordan River Valley.
President Carter here on Tuesday. Does that sound about right to you as part of a security blueprint and a two-state solution? Because I think that's one of the most thorny sticking points in whatever negotiations John Kerry is trying to facilitate right now.
As a Palestinian, I don't want our Palestinian state to invest in military, because that's a dead end. But also, I don't think that it is wise if Israel thinks that that military power is the only answer. In the Bible, and I talk about that in my book, there is the image of the lion laying side by side with the lamb, the lion being a code for the empire and the lamb for the people of Palestine, in this case the Palestinians, on one condition, actually, that the lion become vegetarian, which means actually demilitarized. So I think Israel has to be more and more demilitarized, not Palestine. And so this is really what I'm talking about in the book.
Though Israelis would say not the bulk of Palestinians, but there are still those few who are going to try to launch terror attacks. And at the point of creation of a two-state solution, that's probably going to become even more fierce in reaction. And so there has to be some Israeli defense because it's not only the lion who has teeth.
The Palestinians are calling for example, an international force maybe to be on the boundaries. And I think this is really important.
Which seemed to be what President Carter was saying there, an international force.
Exactly.
You say your book, and my guest, if you're just joining us, is the leader of a little discussed minority in the Middle East, Palestinian Christians. He is Lutheran minister Mitri Raheb, born in Bethlehem, senior pastor of the Evangelical Lutheran Christmas Church there, and author now of Faith in the Face of Empire, The Bible Through Palestinian Eyes. And you say your book is a theology for the Palestinian context. Why a theology? Do you mean an interpretation of Jesus' life for current Palestinian times?
Yeah, and because, you know, I mean, the Bible, I feel, is our story. It's our narrative. And we have to keep developing this narrative. Because Jesus was, you know, from Palestine, so he lived in a very similar situation like ours. And so, really, this book tried to shed a new light on this. And as I write in the book, this is my 16th book. And in the first 15th book, I was dancing to the rhythm of 19th century European organ music. With this book, I feel now I came to dance to the beat of the Palestinian drum. And this is why I was really glad yesterday to see that Amazon has the book as the number one bestseller.
Really?
In
Palestine?
In Christian Liberation Theology books, and number 11 in Middle Eastern International Politics. So I think we are striking the chord.
So can you take a passage from Scripture and tell us how you preach about it from this understanding?
A good, for example, passage is the Tower of Babel, because that represents the empire, you know, very powerful, a great economy, and then they try to unify everyone with one language. But this leads to confusion, because this is what the Greek tried, this is what, you know, every empire tried in the Middle East. And the other image is the image of Pentecost in Jerusalem. When people were speaking different languages, there was the whole world of that time present in Jerusalem, but there was a communication, because diversity, I believe, is something that is so important, you know. And for me, what the Middle East needs now is to embrace diversity and not to think of unilateral power, because, you know, you hear about problems between Sunni and Shiites, between, you know, this and that, Alawites in Syria and Sunni. And I think we are losing time. We are losing our soul. Diversity is so important. And this is the New Testament answer.
There are people in this country who interpret the Tower of Babel story as a warning against too much diversity in any nation, because you're going to have people coming from so many language groups, is the metaphor there,
right,
obviously, that it's hard for everybody to get along and communicate. What would you say to them?
No, I think this is exactly the imperial lens of reading the story. But if you read it in the original context, it was a critique on the empire, because in the Middle East, we have so many languages, we have so many cultures, we have so many identities that really need to live side by side and not for one to control everyone else.
Last thing. You've been a critic of the Israeli occupation for decades, as I mentioned. You say you've written 15 books. But you write in this one that only in the last 10 years have you discovered the geopolitics of the region. What did you discover about the geopolitics in the last decade that you didn't know for the previous ones?
I know it theoretically, but I really didn't think about it. And that is that if you look at Palestine, throughout history, it was surrounded by five regional powers. And whenever these regional powers wanted to have some fun, which we call war, unfortunately, they would come to the most fertile land in Palestine, and have their wars there. This is what the Bible called Armageddon. And I think this is what we are still somehow suffering under. And I would like more and more to see how the Bible was able to transform this battlefield into a holy land. And I think this is exactly what the Bible was able to achieve. I mean, who would have heard say of Bethlehem, that little town? I mean, it would be a ruin today if it were not for God touching that piece of earth. And so he really transformed the history of that whole country.
Mitri Rahab, born in Bethlehem, senior pastor of the Evangelical Lutheran Christmas Church there, president of the larger regional organization, the Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Jordan and the Holy Land, and president of Dar al-Kalima University College in Bethlehem. His new book is Faith in the Face of Empire, The Bible Through Palestinian Eyes. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome.